Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Today on The Grave Talks, the Rose Opera House. Built in the 1870s, the Rose Opera House has seen generations of history pass by it. From being a playhouse to a movie house to an all-purpose gathering place for the community, thousands of souls have come and gone through its doors. Unlike many historic theaters, the Rose does not have a documented, dark, tragic story attached to it. It has a relatively peaceful timeline of existence. When it was near the end of its physical life and on the list for destruction, a group of locals decided to invest and preserve the building for future generations. Today, the spirits of the past continue to reside in the place they found so much happiness in life. At least many of them do. Today on The Grave Talks, we discuss the Haunted Rose Opera House with paranormal investigator Renee Hill.
Well, the beginnings of it was original building was built in 1871. So in this town, and it's in Cynthiana, Kentucky, and that's about 45 minutes north of Lexington, small town, farm community type of thing, but they had the farming that came to that community. It sprouted up and they've got this old downtown. It's about three blocks. It looks like the old West. Everything's got that flat front, like brick building where they're all sandwiched next to each other. And they open that up to start doing plays. And it's a two-story building. And what's neat is I never imagined the plays going on the second story, but you actually went up the stairs and there was that flat floor where they just put the chairs. You imagine all the cowboys, you know, sitting there ready for their entertainment. And you can see up in the ceiling this round soffit, and it's actually where the balcony was, but they put a ceiling so you don't recognize it at first. But we were able to go up there, and you can see the original benches, the original ceiling paint, so it's really neat. Eventually they went to silent movies, and now they do, like, you know, current events. And it was about to be torn down, and three owners came in together and bought the place, and they just loved it. They are all locals, and they decided to try and save it. And I'm glad they did, because it is definitely neat, filled with history. It's got like original 1940s door handles. It's all Art Deco and the original exit signs, and they're trying to put that thing back together. So
that's awesome to see that when people do that and they they do find a way to kind of slowly piece a place like that back together. It's interesting because I've seen many of them over the years throughout the country where it's not as easy as let's just take this house and let's reframe it and put new drywall up. And then essentially the bones of the house are kind of original, but everything else is, you know, new. With a theater, you have so much more involved. You have the architecture, which makes it really what it is. And all of the character that makes it what it is. So even finding ways of a lot of it comes back to just trying to restore the original. It's not going down to the hardware store and let's buy some new Art Deco pieces to attach to this corner of the ceiling or anything like that. It's a lot of craftsmanship that still has to be either redone or redefined or kind of brought back and refurbished to make it what it was. So that's quite an endeavor for folks to take up. Did they have any idea at the time of when they said, let's try and take this place up, what would be involved with it? Did they have any idea of the history of the hauntings involved with this location? What was their knowledge of the building?
They had, like, so when we got there, we were given a tour of the building by one of the owners, mm-hmm. and he used to work there when he was young. And so he knew a lot of the history of it. And I don't know if anyone ever knows what they're really getting into with these remodels, mm-hmm. Because they don't make money. That's for sure.
No.
Every movie they show, every paranormal tour they give is going into this building, and it's completely out of love. And they never were believers in the paranormal until the three of them bought it and started fixing it up, and stuff just started happening to them that they cannot deny. And now all three of them are full on believers. And it's interesting because they're so proud of it. Like, oh my gosh, we have something so neat here. And they're like little kids, you know, us in the paranormal that we're touring all the time. And we see this stuff on a regular basis because we go to all these locations. It was almost like listening to a kid at Christmas tell a story about, you know, I've got this haunted place, and oh my gosh, it's so cool, the things that happen here.
Accepting it for the first time that, oh my gosh, this stuff is real. And I want to talk about some of those experiences and hear about some of the things that happened once they purchased it, but we'll do that a little bit later on in the interview. Give me more about the timeline of the Rose Opera House and what its operations kind of looked like from 1871 up until present day, the ins and the outs, the openings, the closings, the various uses of the building. What did it look like?
Well, and when it originally opened in the 1871, and it was just the two-story building, it was called Aeolian Hall. And, you know, it was just the place for all the locals to get their only source of entertainment. And it has continued to stay throughout the years, as that's the use for this building, has always been entertainment, from the silent movies to local plays to, you know, maybe someone's having an event there. And now they've added, since the paranormal, they've added ghost tours and allowing to rent it out for the paranormal. But it has always been a place for entertainment. But also in 1941, they expanded it out. And so they created a whole new hall on the first level. And that it was in the 40s, and that's where you get all the Art Deco that comes in. And why the building then all of a sudden has that Art Deco look to it. So they had a re-grand opening in 1941, and it has the, you know, the theater seating, and it's all the original chairs that are still there. And they've got these huge Art Deco lights on the side. It's really neat. It really still has its character today. So that's really neat to see.
So when it was, they did the kind of the addition and the Art Deco upgrade at the time, which would have been the modern look of that moment. Did it become like a local movie theater house as well, or did it kind of continue as joint use for plays and entertainment, or what continued on from there?
It did have movies, and then so people would go to see the, you know, the up and coming movies, let's say through the 70s and 80s and stuff. But their projector, this is a neat story, their projector went out and it just wasn't up to date. It wasn't a digital projector. Mm-hmm. And so they lost this income because they couldn't, that's the only format the movies are coming in. Mm-hmm. And so Cynthiana, Kentucky is actually the birthplace of the gentleman that wrote The Walking Dead. So this is the town that's the inspiration for that well-known, television show. Mm-hmm. And so he's a local. Yeah, I'm actually on the side of the building is a really neat mural from The Walking Dead. People come from all around just to take their picture in front of it. But he came into town. He heard about the opera house struggling, and he actually bought them several hundred thousand dollars for this projector, and he gave it to them. So they are once again playing the current today's movies because of that writer of The Walking Dead. That was his hometown. So they're able to now keep making some more money and keep putting it into the opera house. So...
That's great to hear. Zombies to the rescue. now, tell me, obviously, there's a lot of history here when we go back to a building from 1871 and theaters in general. A lot of energy, a lot of emotions expelled in a theater, whether you're the person, if it's a live performance on stage performing, or you're someone in the audience taking it in, it's an emotional experience. So naturally, theaters tend to have, you know, a lot of things seemingly built up in them, almost like a battery. Take me back. What is this can go into rumors as well, but what are you aware of as far as some of the first reported experiences of there being a haunting there? This can go way back. This can be a friend told a friend. But how far back does it go where the rumors of this place being haunted start?
And also to talk about that emotional thing about the theater and kind of how spiritual is, what is another kind of emotional section is way up in the back is the segregated section. Mm-hmm. Where, the black people had to sit and were forced to sit up there. And it's just so far in the back, and it's like this little nook that's tucked out back there. So kind of has another like emotional level to kind of see that, you know, involved in the theater. And but as far as hauntings, a lot of it didn't really, like the stories that I'm hearing from the owners really started with them, and they don't really talk about anything before that. So I don't know if, you know, they just don't know the people before. It just really got started with them working there. And one of their stories is they're in the old part of the building in the original theater room, and they have chairs they have to set up, and they are literally standing there and the chairs flip over and bang on the floor. Like they literally just flip right in front of them. And so that was like one of their first things that kind of weirded them out. But as they're working there at night, they're starting to hear voices, conversations. They go down the hall and nobody's there. They hear footsteps up the stairs. They go, and again, there's nobody there. And they're just kind of like, okay. And eventually they start to see full body apparition, which is, they see this continuously over and over again, a lady in white, which seems to be a couple, you know, places have a lady in white. And this theater has a lady in white. And there's a story from the owner that the ceiling had actually caved in on the upper story right in front of the projector room. And they were having a movie that night, and because the bottom story was fine and the ceiling was fine there, they're still going to do the movie. But he had to crawl over this, all the plaster, all the stuff that fell off the ceiling, to get into that room. And as he's starting the movie up, he sees a lady walk by. And his mind, she goes into the upper balcony, and his mind goes, how did that lady get over all that stuff? Like, he didn't hear anything, and he had to literally climb over this stuff. And he goes, well, she's not allowed to be up here. And he goes after her onto the balcony, and there's nobody there. And he saw her as solid as you and me walk by and go onto that balcony and turn into that. And then he went out there, and there's no way off that balcony. There's no other stairs. There's no other entrance. There's one way in and out. And that's just one of the times that he has seen her. So, and there's been paranormal investigators that have seen her as well. They also have, there's three main spirits that are continued to find over and over. There's children. They keep having children's voices, playing, laughter. That's down below in the 1941 area, more by the stage. And they have a guy that's usually backstage, but he's kind of grumpy. So they call him, you know, the grumpy male, the spirit. Nothing, you know, evil or anything that's, you know, really, really bad, but he's just kind of a grumpy guy. So that's their three main experiences. And then once they started, they've just, all three owners are complete turned around believers in the paranormal now. There's no doubt in their mind, and that spirits exist and they've seen it for themselves.
When they first started having experiences there and being unbelievers in the paranormal or non-believers in the paranormal, did they have any ideas, or did they kind of run any excuses through their mind of, well, maybe it's just this or that? Did they elaborate on any of that when you talked to them?
Yeah, I think they did at first, you know, kind of push it aside. You know, mm-hmm. Going through your day to day, you hear the voices, you know, you hear the footsteps, and you're just like, okay, maybe I didn't mm-hmm. hear that. But it just got to a point where they spent so much time there restoring it, so much time there working on it, that they just then had those experiences that were like, there's no doubt. And they are just all about sharing this now mm-hmm. and getting it out there and being like, look, come see this, come experience this, you know, come be a believer yourself. And they only charge $25 a person, and they're just more than happy to open their doors. And that was for a full overnight investigation. And it's more like they just want to share it mm-hmm. and get to you to come and be a believer yourself sure. because they know they have it there.
It is, like you said earlier, you're making references. It was like a little kid that just kind of discovered something and they're almost giddy about it. That is like how a little kid would be with things where it's like, look at my new toy. Look at this. You have to come see it, you know?
and really are. His eyes were big and yeah. bright and just like, this is the coolest thing. I hope you find something, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, he's telling us all the spots and he's like a kid at Christmas. It was really neat to see just that, how excited they are about their location.
Is there any clue as to the identity of the lady in white that seems to roam the halls and the aisles of the Rose Opera House?
No, and what's interesting is they have no history of tragedy. Like we normally see when we go into a paranormal location mm-hmm. is there's usually a lot of tragedies that's left behind, a lot of energy that has created, you know, a confused spirit or something. But they have no known, you know, deaths at the location, no known events, tragic events or anything. I mean, there's probably negativity due to racial, you know, issues.
Sure.
Some theory of like just between me and my friends that night, I went with Tammy Benjamin and Jason Cobb, great investigators. It was just the three of us locked down in the theater with nobody else. And they were thinking like maybe because it was a place of such happiness. And, you know, when times are tough and you're back in those days and this is where you escape to, mm-hmm. maybe that's where you want to stay. You know, it was like, it could be maybe something happy that's making them, you know, stay there. But on this location, there's no specific stories or tragedies that they know of, no names to tie to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, besides what paranormal investigators, they get some names when they're talking, you know, through EVPs and things like that. So they might start to over time, the more and more they investigate, you know, might start to get the same name over and over again. We might eventually get something there, you know, like that.
Sure. Had it been from the point of the projector breaking down and then getting it revived with that generous donation, was there a point where the building just kind of sat empty and really wasn't in a state of being able to be used for much? Or has it always been somewhat operable?
No, I think there was a time where I just don't know the amount of time, mm-hmm. but I know that it was disrepair and about to be torn out.
Yeah.
And so I know that it had to have been shut down and not being used mm-hmm. At all. So it's really neat. You know, some of the people, someone had taken, there's a crying room, and I didn't even know this in theaters, that if you had a baby mm-hmm. and it was crying during the show, there's a specific room for you to go into.
Sure.
So someone had taken that sign as a young teenager. And when they had it reopen and they had the grand opening again for this new owners, mm-hmm. They brought the sign back, you know, and so they're like trying to help piece it back together. And they have a couple people that have done that and brought pieces back to them. So
that's neat.
Trying to, yeah, restore that history back to them. So
it also makes you want to ask the individuals who had those pieces in their house for a long period of time. Did you have anything happen in your house while you had that piece of the theater in your home?
They don't take stuff from a haunted location because it can't attach to an item.
Yeah.
And that would be interesting.
It'd be interesting to ask that question. I had, it wasn't a ghost investigation or anything, but I had walked through an old elementary school. It's been probably about 10 years, honestly. And it was actually the original elementary school where Dennis Rader went to elementary school, the BTK killer in Wichita. But so had thousands of others that had not turned into serial killers. So it was a very positive place for probably most of the attendees. But I walked through it as they were literally tearing the building down. They were doing construction or destruction, rather, on one half, and the other half was completely open. And they said, yeah, go ahead, take your pictures, just wear this hard hat and don't go past X door. So I did, and it was really neat experience to be in this old abandoned school in its literally last hours of existence. And I did. I took a door sign, just a number sign. There was no rumors of the building being haunted or anything like that, and I still have it to this day somewhere. But it did. My wife looked at me, and she's like, "You took that from that school? What if it's haunted?" I'm like, "Yeah, I thought of that, but Dennis Rader is still alive and in jail, so I don't know. I think most are probably pretty happy there." But it is interesting when you take pieces like that. And I'm not about defacing anything, especially anything that was like a gravesite or a place of a mass tragedy, but places that were happy, places that otherwise are about to be destroyed. And that place within 3 hours of me taking the pictures there was flattened. I think it is neat when you are able to, with permission, get little trinkets and little pieces of history to remember some locations by. Whether they're haunted or not, that's up to the individual taking them in, deciding whether they want to take that risk or not. But the little pieces to remember places that you can't save, that they did exist and that their story can continue to be told. But it's even cooler when you're able to bring them back when the building unsuspectingly is restored. That's a really neat story. With there not being any tragedy there, that's interesting. You have theaters quite often where it's like, well, there was a fire in 1934 and X amount of people died or something. Something typically has happened where we get these stories. What do you think drives these spirits back to this location? And this is just an opinion-based question. Or are they really being driven back? Is this just energy replaying itself, really not necessarily a conscious type energy, but more of a residual?
I always think places seem to have a combo of both, in my opinion, of sometimes residual, like maybe that lady had walked through to that balcony, you know, many times. But when you investigate and you can get answers to your questions, you know, on an EVP, that's an intelligence, and they're listening to you currently as to what you're saying, and then they're answering you back, mm-hmm. then that has to be like, you know, not a recurring you know, spirit. So, and I know that other investigators have gotten answers. So I think we do have intelligent spirits that are choosing to stay around. But I don't know how you feel about portals. I was taught by an investigator that had been doing investigating for 30 some odd years. When I was a brand new investigator, we were at the Washoe Club in Virginia City. She sat me in an area and said, stand here, just stand there. Mm-hmm. And I started to get my body started to like waver around, and it started like I started to get dizzy and lightheaded. And she pulls me out. She goes, that's a portal that you don't want to, if you're ever standing somewhere and that feels like that, get out of it. I normally don't just randomly find them. But that night we had it. I don't know if it helped or for what happened to me that night, because I did have an experience I've never had anywhere else in this opera house. But we found two portals just standing there, like next to my friend Tammy. And she's like, are you feeling what I'm feeling? And I'm like, supposedly the theory is that's a way for the spirits to travel from one place to another. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a door. So we found two of them there by chance, and it was a night of lightning and thunder like crazy. Like, you wouldn't believe when we were driving up to this place, it was a crazy lightning thunderstorm. So maybe that kind of helped kind of amp up the energy for our investigation that night, and, mm-hmm. Make the portals, stronger, because we just found them by randomly walking around.
Sure.
So there is at that location, that you can find.
I can't say I've ever experienced a portal. I don't do much investigating at all. I'm more so just here in the studio, hearing the stories and sharing them, and just kind of being the moderator of all these experiences. But what, so if my questions are fairly elementary, I apologize, but it's one of those things where I think when it's something I've never experienced, I'm guessing a lot of our audience who also does not investigate has never experienced either. So I want to try and fully understand what a portal is, what it feels like, what causes one, all of that. And we hear the word thrown around quite a bit, but let me start there. What causes a portal? Is it something that's always been in that area, whether there's a building on it or not? Or is it something that is literally like the right recipe for whatever is now in that area, and that creates this doorway that otherwise was not there?
Yeah, I was, like I said, taught by some investigators that have been doing this for, 30 years. And, so they just give me this information. And as I investigate over time, when I first was, I didn't know what to think of it when people were telling me about portals. And that's probably they're listening to me now and thinking, okay, gone off the deep end now. And that's what I thought when they were telling me. Mm-hmm. But over time, you start going to all these locations. And you stood in one and you feel it. And sometimes you have zero activity in a location, and sometimes you have a bunch, and it correlates like when those portals are open. So there's, I've been told by people that there's certain times of year, like the harvest moons and the, Hollow Eve. That's when like the portals are open, and then expect more energy and expect more activity. So they, I also believe that if you're going to have like lightning, those things are going to open. So supposedly they open and close, and it allows for spirits to come and go from one location to another. It's kind of their doorways, so to speak. It's interesting that when she put me in that one and was like, she said, I want you to know what it feels like, because if you're standing in one, you need to get out of it, because it will make you sick. It'll make you ill. So she wanted me to know this and be careful of myself. Mm-hmm. So she was teaching me. And I didn't know what she was doing when she was doing it. And when I was just standing there going, why is she making me stand here?
Yeah.
And your body just starts to sway. And you're like, why am I swaying? And you just all of a sudden get more and more dizzy, and you start to feel like lightheaded until you get out of that area. And so you can feel it. It's like an energy, or like all these spirits, and we're measuring with like K2 and energy spikes. You can feel it. You can feel that. You can feel that doorway. And yeah. It's just taken me 7 years of investigating to go, okay, I kind of think there's something to this.
Sure.
You know,
I don't want to go all exorcist on it, but my question would be, are they dangerous other than it can make you sick because of all the energy that's coming, kind of being expelled in one area? But is there a danger there where you're standing essentially in the place where something is manifesting itself and entering? Is there a danger there where it could then suddenly attach to you or get into you somehow because you're standing where it is manifesting?
I don't believe so. I think that it's just so much energy. You're just going to get that lightheaded and get that headache. And then meaning that there's more energy in the area. If you are in a location with a negative spirit, mm-hmm. and you know that obviously there's enough energy in the area for that portal, you know, maybe it's able to do some more things. It mm-hmm. could possibly like attach to you, you know, because it just has that much energy available for it yeah. to use. I don't know, necessarily standing in that portal mm-hmm. would be a danger.
It's almost, I mean, the analogy I guess you could make would be like standing in front of a fan that has a blade cover on, which most fans do today, where if you're standing in front of it, you're feeling it. You're feeling the fan. If you don't want to feel the fan, don't stand in front of the fan. But you're not going to get cut by the blades unless you open up the cover for it. And I guess opening up the cover would be some form of interaction that opens up a doorway and a connection between the two of you, the spirit and yourself, after whatever manifests is manifested. Would that be somewhat accurate?
Yeah, I would think that would be a good description. I don't think that just standing there is going to do more than make you ill if you continue to stand in it. And that would be about it, I think.
Can a person open a portal on demand, or is it 100% based on other forces?
I've seen some things on television where they are trying to open them on demand and using machines that create energy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, scientifically, what's kind of interesting about all this is, like, you know, we're trying to measure and find something that we know is there, but scientifically there's not the machines to prove it.
Sure.
And I do think that over time we will get the science. And that's how we do that, by these experiments and mm-hmm. by these different things these people are doing and, you know, failing and not failing. So I think, you know, they might get there yeah. one day.
I mean, that wraps up the first part of our conversation and interview with Renee Hill about the Haunted Rose Opera House. In part two, we're going to dive into her investigation and what drew Renee to want to investigate the Opera House in the first place. We'll ask what it was like the first time she stepped through the doors of the Rose Opera House and what kind of experiences she had during the investigation. And are you more likely to have a positive investigation if the investigators maintain a positive attitude? Did Renee experience a possession herself while investigating the Opera House? What did that spirit want Renee to know? And why was it overwhelmingly sad? Was there a message? Was there an experience from the past she wanted Renee to feel so we could better understand it in the present? Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.